Hello and welcome to the Open Paddock Rallycast. This is episode 28 for Tuesday, February 13th, 2018. In this week's show, we have special guest Keith Morrison from the Great White North. Keith is one of the directors heading up the recently formed Rally Promoter Association of Canada, which has a mission to bring the WRC to Canadian soil. We'll talk about their plan to make this happen and get a bit of background on Keith, who's an avid rallyist himself. This is Open Paddock, the Rallycast. As I said, we have with us special guest Keith Morrison, who's going to try and get WRC to come to Canada. Keith, welcome to the show. You're talking to us all the way from Alberta, Canada, there, in Calgary. First, what's the weather like there?
Actually, today's been pretty good. We were above freezing today for every day, but yesterday, typical Alberta day, started in the minus 30s and got to minus 4. So massive temperature swing over the past few days.
Wow. So, you know, it gets to, I don't know. Well, of course, you're talking about Celsius there, but
yeah.
Still, yeah, it gets just right at freezing and we're just like freaking out here. So in the Pacific Northwest, it's like, oh, there could be a little bit of freezing fog or ice. Oh, no. You know.
I keep on thinking of moving out to the West Coast, and that's certainly one of the reasons why.
Well, it doesn't, you know, we don't get that many days of snow here. I mean, we get about, on average, we usually get maybe 3 days of snow in a year. This year, we haven't had any, but in the valley, yeah, it's, but if you want to get to the snow, you can always drive up to it, so, you know, there's mountains. All right, so before we get on to this WRC business, I always like to ask our new guests, how did they get started in rally? Because you've obviously been involved in the sport for quite some time. Give us a little bit of background. How did you get the rally bug?
Well, I got the rally bug by coming across the Canadian Rally Championship on TV. Of course, the CRC has been broadcast on TSN up here in Canada for, I think it's almost 3 decades. And growing up, and when I was you know, younger, obviously, I'd be flipping around the TV, and suddenly I'd see rally on TV, and I'd stop what I was doing, and it was this little bit of found gold, as I would like to call it, and I would just sit back, and whatever I was doing, I'd just sit and watch the show and see what was going on. I was just mesmerized by it, and that's what really got me interested, and I started watching the WRC on Speed TV and that sort of thing. And then I'd moved to Calgary to work for the Calgary Herald as a news photographer. And I was walking through the newsroom one day and found a press release kit from, it was actually Tom McGeer's rally team before he was with Subaru Canada. And the Rocky Mountain Rally was happening that weekend. And I talked to the sports editors about covering it. Went out, and that was my first taste of Rally Live. You know, the first event I actually went to. And the people here in Calgary, particularly Sean Bishop, did a really good job of keeping in touch with me because, you know, hey, I'm with the media and I showed up to a rally, so I have to be special.
yeah. Awesome.
And in fact, it was a hard sell to the newspaper to get them to look at the stuff I was going to shoot. And I ended up shooting a lot of basically the stuff in the forest I shot on my time off and got a 2-page spread in a broadsheet Metro for the rally.
Awesome. So is this your first time shooting motorsports in general?
I had shot IndyCar, like Vancouver Indy, a few years prior when I was freelancing in Vancouver, and shot a little bit of stuff for the smaller papers I worked at. You know, sort of local BMX or motocross tracks and stuff like that. But it was that was in 2000, and that was my first exposure to rally, and certainly shooting rally. The first rally that I shot in person, the first car on the road, was actually it was a Subaru Canada, or it was Tom McGeer's car, but he wasn't there that weekend, and John Buffum was driving it. And so the first car I had a chance to take a picture of was Buffum at Speed, so it was quite an interesting moment.
Wow. Yeah, that would be pretty cool. So from there, you're shooting for the Herald, doing some work there, and end up, you know, being able to help cover that one rally, and you get a spread there. So what happens at that point?
Well, as I say, Sean Bishop, who is a long-time person in the sport here in Alberta, and at the time was one of the organizers of the Rocky, just kept in touch with me and said, "Hey, we got a regional event coming up. We've got navigationals coming up." And I asked the question of, you know, how do I actually get involved with doing this? You know, through the process of then, you know, I covered Rocky when it came around the next year and got even better coverage for the event with basically a sports front for them, that featured the new Subaru Team Canada cars. But from there, it ended up, you know, Sean hooked me up with a driver who was looking for a co-driver for his first event. So, you know, a couple of us guys who didn't know what we were doing at all. And I entered my first event as a co-driver, which was the Canadaskis Rally in 2001. We made it 3/4 of the way through the event before we turned what was a nice sleek oval track into a white ball at the side of the road. So,
oops
indeed.
Well, obviously you're familiar with the snow rallies then, with that area and you know all the winters that you guys get there. But you also competed, so you've continued doing, you know, competition like that, co-driving. I believe you said you've driven a little bit too, but you also competed in a rally rather recently, right? A different kind?
Sadly, I didn't. You're talking about the Thunderbird Rally, which is a navigational rally out of starts and ends in Merritt, BC. We had a avalanche block off the Trans-Canada Highway, and we couldn't get through to the event. We made it as far as Golden, waited out the expected closure, then apparently a second avalanche came down just as they cleaned up the first.
So you're supposed to be in it, but... Didn't happen.
Yeah, my buddy Mark Ward navigates for me in the navigational rallies. We've done a whole bunch of them in the past couple of years, and we did them in about 2004, 2005. We were doing a bunch of navigationals as well. And now I've got a coming up 40-year-old Volvo 242 GT that we run in the navigationals, and it's an absolute blast. We're absolutely looking forward to Thunderbird, and we hear it was icy but warm conditions, which would have been just about perfect for us.
So what makes those rallies, you know, because I looked it up a little bit, and it's 800 kilometers approximately, which is longer than any stage rally is, and the conditions definitely are, you know, slick or changeable. But you're not trying to, you know, obviously go as fast as you can. You're using road speeds and trying to hit a target.
Yeah.
What kind of challenges, though, do you tend to run into? I mean, this isn't just, you know, oh, yeah, it's winter out and I'm just going for a drive. There's more to it than that, right?
Oh, absolutely there is. The navigational rallies, one of the things I like about them is that it's a real strong teamwork in the car between the navigator making sure that I know where I'm going and whether I'm early or late and keeping me focused on that. And between me as a driver in terms of having to make sure that I am staying on the prescribed time. To clarify this a little bit, the whole idea is we're given a route to follow, which is fairly straightforward instructions. Then we're also given the average speed that we're supposed to be traveling through sections, and it can change at any given point. Most rally organizers will take a cattle guard or a road sign or something like that and say, well, you change to this speed at this point. Mm-hmm. Not everybody does that. And Paul Westwick, who organizes the Thunderbird, is pretty good at making these things challenging and making sure that the speeds that he's given you are legal or actually below the legal speed limit, but that the road is still challenging to drive. And then there's little things like, you know, is the checkpoint before a series of switchback corners or after that series of switchback corners? So you have to, as a driver, you have to figure, okay, I have to come up a little bit early to these corners. So I've got that extra time because I won't be able to drive at that speed through those corners. Or, you know, do I go in exactly on time in case the checkpoint is just before them? the scoring is based on hidden checkpoints. So we don't know. Yeah, we don't know where the checkpoints are going to be. We drive past them and they mark us our time down. And for we basically get a 9/10 of a second grace period on either side of perfect time. And as you're so if you're more than a second early or late, you take a 1 second penalty point. And to give you an idea, the winners this year, I think, had 15 points over the full length of the rally.
Wow. So off by 15 total seconds after 800 kilometers.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the I think the top three were all under 20 points. So it's, you know, that's really committed driving. And with something like my 242, you know, we're effectively up against WRXs and, you know, other turbo all-wheel drive cars that are, you know, three times the torque that I've got in the lovely Volvo. And I've got two-wheel drive. So it's even more of a challenge there sometimes to make sure that you're guessing where the checkpoints are and knowing when you can go in with a little bit of a cushion or not. So it's a very, very disciplined drive. And I think that's what I like about it, is that you're always watching when you are on the road as well as where you are.
And these are, I mean, they're public roads, but they're off-road, right? This is gravel roads that are, you know, linked together in a lot of cases, although in this case it's snow, so it probably doesn't matter whether it's pavement or not.
Yeah, well, it's using, I mean, obviously, it's very much like a stage rally where there'll be regularity sections, which would be like a stage, and then transits that connect them. So you'll have, you know, we can't avoid all of the tarmac or all of the pavement, but usually the regular sections are going to be forestry roads. So they're narrow exposures, rough here and there, cattle guards to deal with. And in fact, if I go back a few years, you'll often find that they're using roads that are used as stage routes in the area. And certainly some of the big white roads were used in 2004, and I remember that quite distinctly.
So let's move back to a stage rally. So you did some co-driving. You also did, I think, a little bit of driving in that as well?
Yeah, I basically, the first 2 years of involvement, again, my first event, I was a co-driver. That was in the fall of 2001. 2002, I co-drove for a local champion, actually, that year was... or the champion from 2001 asked me. That was Janusz Komorowski Jr. I did 2002 co-driving for him. 2003, I took a bit of year, most of the year off, but in that year, I also built a second-gen RX-7 to run on the stages and ran that one at Kananaskis. Most of 2003, it was a transition year for me. I'd left the Herald and was started building up my own company a little bit. And I also traveled with Pat Richard on his Production World Rally Championship Tour as a photographer for him, doing six of the seven or eight events that he did. Then, as I say, I drove the 2.5 RS that I picked up for all of 2004. It just happened to work out where the opportunity to buy that car came up, and somebody wanted to buy my RX-7. I pulled off the amazing feat of actually selling the car for what I put into building it.
Wow. That never happens.
After one event to a motivated buyer who was thrilled and ran it until he destroyed it. So that all worked out really well. Then I sold, actually got a phone call from a fellow by the name of John Vanas in Ontario, saying that he was calling to buy the RS from me. Which I hadn't intended on selling, but again, the right buyer at the right time picked it up. And I went back to co-driving, and that was me pairing up with Norman LeBlanc, who I co-drove for four seasons. And we had quite a bit of success and a whole bunch of fun in the car. So, and then basically co-driving since then, one driving stint, Jason Bailey rented me a car for Pacific Forest Rally in 2016, just because I wanted to get back in the seat, and had a blast at that.
Awesome. Yeah, we love Jason. We've had him down here for Oregon Trail, seen him many times up at Olympus as well, and boy, he's not slow.
He's not, and he's a wonderful guy as well.
Exactly. So you've also then, of course, gone into organizing and volunteering to help put on events.
Yeah.
Explain that role. I guess you took your knowledge to the next level.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I started organizing rallies. I started with organizing a navigation rally, a longtime event here called the Loop Rally. And I honestly can't remember when my first run at that was, but it would have been probably 2004, 2005 that I organized that. Then started doing the started with the regional events around here, organized the Kananaskis Rally. And was helping Sean Bishop and Suzanne Berry with organizing the Rocky Mountain Rally, helping with media plans and that sort of stuff. That's where my strength was. But as time went on, I ended up taking on the lead position for Rocky, and got sort of drawn into helping with the Big White Rally as well. And that sort of, yeah, that led me to a point where I was organizing a lot and I wanted to get back in the car. So I took a step back, co-drove Josh Suchuk for a couple of years, and then got hauled back into organizing. And that puts me where I am right now, where I'm a clerk of the course for most of the Alberta events, senior organizer for Rocky Mountain Rally and Big White Rally. Big White being out of Kelowna, BC, and brought that one up from being a regional event into being in the Canadian Rally Championship. So I actually organized two of the CRC events right now, and that sort of got me to where I am. When I drove in 2016, I took that as a bit of a opportunity to do a little bit of self-reflection. And when I look at how I'm involved in the sport, I actually got to the point where I sort of realized that I can co-drive at a higher level than I can drive at, both financially and ability. I like to think of myself as a good co-driver and able to do well in a fairly quick car, certainly at my peak. When I was running with Norm LeBlanc, we were actually in a production Subaru. We were usually second or third overall at Canadian events. And
wow.
And able to run solid top 10 in the Rally America events that we're going to. Back in the day, actually, I remember an Oregon Trail rally where we were up against, we're battling with Tanner Faust, Matt Johnson, Eric Langbein, and someone else whose name skips my mind at the moment. But very, very tight battles with those guys. And in fact, the first event we did down there, Tanner was talking about how he's in a clean position for the class when we were actually beating him by about 30 seconds. So he didn't know who we were or where we came from, but it was always, always good battles with those guys. But back to my reflection, what I was saying is that I know that I can co-drive at a higher level than I can drive at. I've come to the conclusion that I can organize at a higher level than I can co-drive at. I've had some really good compliments from very experienced people about my events, and I enjoy organizing and I enjoy seeing an event come off well. And that has led me to where we are today in terms of me looking at the opportunity to organize at the highest level possible.
So, you know, and with that, we now have this new organization in addition to you. And I don't know how I'm one of the people that helps organize the Oregon Trail Rally, and just doing one event a year is mind boggling the amount of effort that it takes to do a national championship round. And you do two of them a year. And then on top of that, you've now helped create this organization, the Rally Promoter Association of Canada. We just saw, you know, last week it came out, it was released that you guys are planning on bringing the WRC to Canada. Explain this association and how that all happened.
Okay, yeah, it's, I know it sounds like I'm a masochist or something like that, but it's
a little bit, yeah.
it's actually really exciting, and by the time we get to having a WRC round, hopefully we'll have people in place to take my roles at the national events. And also the idea is that the new organizing group for the WRC event would also lend a hand to our current national events to make things come together easier for them. But basically, the Rally Promoter Association of Canada is a new not-for-profit association that we've put together with the idea that we're going to investigate how we can bring a WRC event to Canada, understand exactly what it will take from us in terms of doing it, what it will bring to us in terms of benefits, and make sure that the benefits outweigh the costs in every way of doing it. We've set it up with a handful of people that I've selected for specific reasons, in that I get along with them and they've got skills and a mindset that I need to flesh out the way we look at things. There's myself, but I actually organized the World Championships in Canada for the radio control gliders. So this actually won't be my first World Championship event to organize. There's George Descalis, who's actually a former CARS president and a championship, like a production champion driver in Canada, and a successful business owner. He owned a restaurant here in Calgary for many, many years. Martin Burnley, who is a current director on the CARS board, the former treasurer for them, somebody with international business experience from his own company they owned for a long time, also an active co-driver today. We've got Chris Kramer, who's an active co-driver from here, but he's also a paramedic with the Calgary EMS, and he's sort of our medical perspective on it. One of the things that WRC events do is, you know, their safety and medical standby is unbelievable. So I wanted to bring somebody in that can understand that language and understand what we need to do here. And so that's certainly what Chris brings to it. And Chris is also a active co-driver and on the CARS board. And then Warwick Patterson is also on our founding board. And of course, he's the well-known for his media efforts with launch control in the Canadian Rally Championship. He's also got a good connection to Red Bull Media and the WRC promoter, because he's shot for them. And in fact, it was some of the conversations he had with the WRC promoter in the last year that sort of relit the fire on this discussion.
Well, when you say relit the fire, yeah. I mean, looking at your website and whatnot that you've created for this, it says that you kind of started looking at the idea in 2011. What prompted the idea, and how easy or difficult has it been to bring people on board with this concept of trying to bring WRC to Canada before you even promote, get to the point of even asking the folks at, you know, WRC promoter?
Well, it's sort of interesting. They asked us in 2011. At the time, I was the marketing manager for CARS, and we actually got an email from the promoter at the time that basically sort of said that they'd be curious to see what it would take to get us interested in hosting an event. And I gather they do that with markets they're sort of interested in looking at. The president at the time, Tom McGeer, fired the email to me because it went to him. And as marketing director, he threw it to me, knowing that marketing was going to be a big part of our yes or no on whether we would look at it. So we had a long discussion about it before we even responded. And then eventually set up a conference call with them to sort of say, okay, you know, let's talk about this. First thing they said to us was that normally they get a response back from that email in minutes. And we took weeks, and they were curious about why. And of course, we had two prospective events in Canada that were looking at WRC, both Rally Charlevoix and the Rally International Quebec, that both were looked at favorably, had paths to get to where they wanted to go to, and then both faced challenges that basically shut them down. And obviously they didn't become part of the WRC. In fact, both events went away. Charlevoix has recently come back very strongly and is putting on some wonderful events now. But as an organization, CARS was wary about that and wanted to make sure that we knew why we wanted to do WRC event, how we would do it, and how we'd make sure that we didn't follow the same traps as we're seeing before. So after initial discussions, we decided to, I was so excited about it, I actually split costs with the association to go and observe Sweden in 2012 and looked at it from the, both the aspect of, can we do this, you know, and how big of a step up is some, a WRC event from what we're doing in the CRC at that time, and to really get a handle on what it takes to do this. Probably the standout thing to me was when the clerk of the course for Rally Sweden said to me that they have 3,000 volunteers.
Whoa.
And
because I mean just to give you a bit of a scale, you know, I mean Oregon Trail Rally, which is a 3-day event, which is unusual in and of itself. Most events between the US and Canada are 1 to 2 days. Yeah. So a 3-day event, we're talking 350 volunteers. If we're lucky, we'll get 400, but usually 350. So 3,000 volunteers. My goodness, that's insane.
Yeah, and actually the Rocky Mountain Rally and Big White both are running around 100 volunteers for what we're doing, which we can manage through some paying attention to how we use our roads. So we're not having to staff a lot of stages at the same time. Now, it's interesting, I think my jaw hit the floor because the clerk looked at me and said, "Don't worry, only 300 know anything about rally, and the rest are, you know, taking tickets at the gate to the stages, or parking cars, or just doing crowd control, or that sort of thing." So he says, "You know, there's a lot of non-rally people involved. In fact, one of the big takeaways from that event that I took was to involve local service clubs. I asked the a guy working in one of the car parks where he parked, I said to him, doesn't it bother you to be standing here and you can hear the cars go by at, in the spectator area that's just 200 meters that way? He goes, I don't care about rally. I said, well, why are you here? I said, why are you here? He says, well, I'm a Rotarian. This is the Rotarian parking area. And our club gets the entire parking gate. So to partner with local groups and local organizations that actually see a benefit come to them from volunteering at the events is one thing that I really brought back as a way to move forward and try and engage the community a little bit more in the areas that you're running. But yeah, so at the end of the day, I came out of Sweden thinking that it was something, you know, it was a massive step up, but scalable in so many ways, and felt that within the right location and with a national approach to it, that we can do it. There were a lot of people who were really skeptical of that, people with a lot of experience and seasoned organizers just sort of saying, you know, this is a big, big job. And it is. But I came out of it confident that we could do it, but not confident that that was the right time. There were some questions about the TV broadcast and the promotion of the championship at that point in time.
And what year was this that you were at Sweden?
2012.
Okay.
But between then and now, we've sort of occasionally kept in touch with the WRC promoter. And as I sort of said, Warwick Patterson would run into him regularly at events. And then John Hall ran into, I guess it was at Rally GB last year. And or the year before, and
isn't it was it Oliver Cisla? That's the one that is the one that heads.
He's the managing director for WRC promoter,
right?
And we're talking to a fellow by the name of Simon Larkin, who's the director of events development, and Simon's been absolutely fantastic. So yeah, the as I was saying, John Hall was in at Rally GB and ended up having a chat with Simon at that event, and that led to us reopening the discussion, and I was brought back in. I'm no longer involved with the CARS board directly, but I was brought in because of my background from 2011-2012. And we've got some really good information from WRC Promoter about their current exposure and their plans moving forward, and things like the all live that they're doing right now in the broadcast. And that
it's a different world now.
We
talked about it on our last podcast. It's all live. Wow. The landscape of how Rally is delivered to the public has made a massive shift in the last couple of years.
Absolutely. And what we're seeing is some really good exposure numbers from them, some real, really big interest from them in helping us get to where we need to be. And there's a few other things that have just sort of gelled in terms of my perspective that make me think this is the time that we need to take a really good look at it and see what we can do with it.
So a couple of questions that I have, though, is, you know, most WRC events are around the 350 to 400 kilometer competition miles.
Yeah.
Level. Most U.S. and Canadian events are 150, if you're lucky, maybe 200. So how do we get to that without, like, repeating a stage three or four times? Do you guys have those kinds of roads up there in Canada to do an event like that?
I think we do. And the mistake is to think that we're going to take a one round of the Canadian Rally Championship and turn it into the WRC event. That's not it. The WRC event is going to be a new event. We actually don't even know for sure where it's going to be right now. We certainly have some ideas, but it's premature to say it's going to be here or there. But it will likely involve a completely new set of roads. But the areas that we're looking at for the various options all have good road opportunities. The decision on where the event's going to be is going to really be driven by funding. Most of the WRC events have 80% or more of their budgets come from tourism boards. And so we need to talk to the Canadian Tourism Board and some provincial tourism boards and even down to the city level and sort of say, okay, you know, we need this much budget. How much can you help us with that? And that combined with the logistics of getting the sea freight into Canada, landed into the service park, are going to really point to where we want to hold the event. But in terms of the roads go, you know, there's lots of really good quality roads to be looked at around the country. And I'm not too concerned about being able to find 300 kilometers.
So does it, from what we've seen, kind of just some of the images and whatnot, and maybe because they're just more recent from Big White, but it looks like you're steering towards it being a winter rally. Is that correct? To kind of maybe better fit in the calendar?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually less to do with calendar than it is what attracts the WRC.
Okay.
And in that we already know, and you would have seen the quote on our website that the WRC promoter wants to come to Canada because they see it as a viable marketing location. And certainly my discussions, both now and back in 2012, very interested in a snow event. So when you look at when can we offer an event that is going to have good snow, we're looking February. So we already sort of know what time of year the event's going to happen. We just have to figure out the where, and it has to be somewhere that's got good snow that time of the year. And, you know, we'll just sort of see how that figures out.
So my way of thinking with this is because, you know, one of the things that the manufacturers, of course, the teams balk at travel costs, of course, even though it is the World Rally Championship, we know it's very Eurocentric.
Yeah.
You know, we've all been wanting New Zealand to come back, and they won't even go there yet. You know, they go to Australia, and that's, you know, relatively speaking, that's not too far from each other. Would the idea be that, you know, they could boat the cars over here, they could do a WRC Canada, then they just have to truck haul straight south across the United States down to Rally Mexico?
That I think we're a little bit too far away to figure out how the teams are going to do that. Certainly, that would have been my guess on logistics. And I think if that's the way the calendar shakes out, that's certainly something they're going to look at. Yeah, one of the conversations they had, they talked about a second set of sea freight, so it would send one to Canada, one to Mexico. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me because with a couple of weeks in between the events, you can ground freight the cars and do your reprep in Mexico. But quite frankly, as an event organizer, that's not a lot of my concern.
Fair point.
Yeah. They come to me, they leave me, and it's, we'll probably have to help in terms of dealing with the governments along the way so they understand the stuff that's going from A to B, and what restrictions they're going to have. But beyond that, as I say, it's really up to the WRC itself and the teams as to how they're going to manage that.
So one of the questions that actually Ian ended up asking here is, he was saying that it seemed to him that the reaction in North American rally in general has been nothing short of amazing to this announcement. What are your thoughts about the reaction so far, and what kind of feedback have you received since the announcement?
The feedback has been amazing. I don't have our websites right in front of me, but you know, Warwick Patterson was blown away by the number of shares and the likes, and our Facebook page blew up with our initial announcement, and a little bit with the accidental leak the day before. Everything I've read, I mean, when you announce something like this, you sort of expect there to be a couple of naysayers out there, and the reality is I've read, I haven't seen anything particularly negative about it. Some people skeptical, some people critical in very broad terms, but the reaction's been fantastic. We've had people that were sort of missing from the sport for a while come back and buy memberships to the association and get really excited about it. We've had, you know, a lot of people send me emails directly saying, hey, how do I get involved with this, or how do I help out? So it's exciting, and it has been really, really good response from it. And as I say, that very little, if any, negative has come out about it, which it really, really pleases me.
Well, actually, that brings me to a good point, is how can a U.S. or Canadian rally fan help with this? Because obviously it is a big undertaking. I believe I saw something about a membership, as you were saying.
Yeah, absolutely. The reality is that we need a small team of people at this stage. As I say, we're years away from needing 3,000 volunteers. At this point in time, there's going to be a few of us that are going to be putting in a fair bit of time into, as I say, meeting with tourism, meeting with the governments, meeting with Transport Canada, meeting with the provincial transport groups to say, hey, you know, we're bringing these cars, these big studs over. How do we make this work? And yeah, it's interesting. The exposure to an event like the WRC can bring will move a lot of people's opinions in terms of what they can and can't do. But we've got a lot of meetings, a lot of travel, and yes, we're going to have to go to some WRC events to sit down and work with them to understand how they do things. So as I say, there's a bunch of us that are volunteering a whole bunch of time to do this. And the best way that people can help us do that is to go to the website, which is rallypromoter.ca, and buy a membership. We have memberships at $75, which is the basic membership, and that's Canadian dollars, so it's quite a bit less for you. supporting memberships, which are $150, and actually we're selling 2-to-1 right now, the supporting memberships to the basics. So it's been,
wow,
the people that are signing up are signing up with some enthusiasm. But the concept behind it is that by giving $75, you're going to help cover off the costs that we're incurring in chasing this idea. We've committed to not paying any wages, or not we're not going to take any money for our time until we get corporate sponsorship in and until we get to the event itself. So any money that comes in is going to be going strictly to cover our costs of going to these meetings and making sure that we're doing this the right way. So to buy a membership and help us do that, I think is a reasonable request out of the rally fan. So if the WRC in northern North America is something that you want to see, seeing that Mexico actually is in North America.
Well, actually, I want to throw in something in there, and it's something I said with the initial announcement. It's like, I'm sorry, Mexico, we see you as Central America. I know you're part of the North American continent, but, you know, like, socially, regionally speaking, you're Central America. You're not North America.
Well,
love your event, but, you know.
And I think we hear that a lot, and certainly in Canada, even further removed from Mexico, we don't think of them as North America, but they are.
Yeah, they're part of the continent. We'll give them that.
So I guess back to the point is that, you know, for anybody who's interested in seeing this happen, for anybody who says it'd be great to see a WRC event in Canada, a $75 membership, you know, will help make that happen. And what it does for us is it allows us to get out there, talk to people, talk to potential sponsors, and make sure that we do this in a way that's going to bring benefits down the road for the sport. If we get to the WRC event, if you're at whatever level of membership that you've bought in at, you'll end up getting either swag or other benefits that'll pay back that money easily. So it's sort of an investment in the future and helping us get there.
So you said something earlier, actually, that was kind of interesting. You said that, you know, the excitement of bringing these, you know, exciting cars with their massive studs coming over to Canada.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I recall is, and only recently, have you guys started allowing studded tires on Canadian rally events? And at that, normally just street studs. So that's got to be a bit of a challenge to allow for these events, cars that are running, gosh, these tungsten tipped daggers, right?
Absolutely. It's one of those things where that's not something that we would take up with the governments for our championship. And certainly there's a series in Quebec that is running the WRC studs in their events. Cars chose not to do it for a number of reasons. And one of them being that we just didn't think it was right for our competitors. And I won't get into an argument on that one way or the other, but,
right. Cheap, first of all, right? I mean, so
they're not cheap, that's for sure.
Right.
In Western Canada, we've actually run a modified street stud, and that the exposure is a little bit more than you would see in a regular road going car. We're about 3.5 millimeter exposure is our max, but it's a standard TSMI stud, and cars adopted that a couple of years ago for the Canadian Rally Championship. And in part, it's because Big White came in and the competitors there had been used to being allowed those. Paris-Neige was asking for them. And then Tall Pines is in an odd area where their legislation wouldn't allow them anyway, so it's not a big deal for Pines. But the really interesting thing, though, is that Big White, even with the studs allowed, it's been a studless tire that's won that event more times than not. So in those cases, the modified street stud isn't really a magic bullet, as it were. The Sweden studs, as they're called from the WRC, different game completely, absolutely night and day. I've never had a chance to compete on them, but the people I know that have said that they actually get near tarmac levels of grip.
Oh yeah, I mean the Sweden WRC Sweden is speeds close to Finland or when they ran Poland, right? I mean, it's insane. But then you get the stopping power like tarmac. It's complete insanity. It really is. But in the same stead, you guys also have. I mean, you guys are proper snow rally when you have a winter rally, right? You got snow banks you can lean on and all that stuff, just like Sweden.
Typically we do. Big White is sort of hit and miss, depending on how the season's going. Paris-Neige usually has really good snow and well-defined snowbanks by that point in time. Both events can be icy, but tend not to be. And that's one of the reasons why we're looking late February is, we can actually look to make sure that we've got good snow, good snowbanks, and have a proper winter event. Back to studs for a second, though, that's one of many things that we'll end up having to talk to the governments at all levels about. And again, another reason why we need to go out and do a whole bunch of meetings is to say to them, you know, not only are these cars that aren't normally sold here coming over, but they've got roll cages, they've got these big spiky tires and all these things that are going on. We're going to have to talk to the government, make sure that we can make all this stuff work. And the beauty of that is that I expect that we'll be able to push down to the cars that are here and make licensing and registering rally cars in Canada a whole bunch easier by the time we're through this.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. So just kind of a big win-win for everybody there.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you have a timeline. We didn't really talk about that earlier. So obviously you started kind of talks in 2011. you know, obviously the economy in general was still trying to build back. But then you got Warwick having his, you know, connections throughout over time over there. Manufacturers getting back into it. Excitement's building again. We now have WRC Plus, now all live. Communication comes back. And now you're getting back involved in this plan again. You're starting this organization to try and get the WRC here. What's our timeline from this point to when you'd like to see WRC cars finally arrive in Canada?
Our timeline right now is looking at 5 years from today to have a WRC event. We need to have an event successfully observed before we actually hold the WRC event. And while it won't have to be the entire WRC event as it is, or as it is going to be, it does have to have a lot of the same elements. So in 4 years, we need to have our observation event. And to get there from scratch and setting up everything we need to do in terms of sponsorships and government agreements and getting things signed off on, as I say, I'm giving myself 4 years to get to there, 5 years to get to WRC. And that's in line with where most of the other events have said it's taken them to get there. I've had conversations with people from Rally Mexico and from other events, and they've, you know, to a man have said, yeah, count on 5 years to get there. Could probably shorten that by a year or two if we were working at it full time. But as I say, we're a bunch of volunteers, and fitting this in with our other duties. And you know, it's still a fairly aggressive schedule, I think, to take the 5 years to do it.
Well, that's super exciting. I was floored when I saw the email first come across about this idea. And how does it feel for yourself as, you know, a guy that first watched that on the TV, you know, and now you're setting plans for the WRC to come to Canada? I mean, that's got to be something special, just even getting to the point where you're planning.
It is. And, you know, as somebody who, you know, that my first WRC event I ever attended was almost by accident, in that I was in Finland for a completely different event, and it happened to be the same week as the WRC Finland.
How can that be an accident? Come on. It's WRC Finland, for God's sakes.
But believe it, that was in 2002 when I was just getting into the sport, and the event I was going to was actually a world championship event for radio control gliders. And I was a Canadian team manager. And I was so focused on an event, it completely slipped my mind that the rally was that same week.
Wow.
When I got over there, I saw the advertising for it. I ended up going and spectating on the Sunday, and actually stopped in when they were setting up the service park the week before the event. And had some good chats with people there about stuff. And to go from that to shooting a bunch of rallies with Pat Richard and just being in awe at those events. And that's probably the bigger shift for me, is being a photographer at these events and then coming to the point where I'm looking at organizing one is just, it's incredible. It's a really interesting and exciting feeling for sure.
Well, I'm so impressed with what you've put together so far, the plan that you've set ahead for yourselves. It seems attainable. If I saw that you guys were going to try and get it done in 2 years, I'd be like, good luck. But you seem like you guys are, the folks behind this are really trying to set a focused plan, step by step, do it right, don't rush it. If you get more backing so you can accelerate things, great. But it seems like you definitely have the right plan to move it forward, and I couldn't be happier to see you guys get ready for this. And I better hurry up and get my damn passport. I got all the forms filled out, sitting right over here, and I just got to get my damn picture taken for the damn things. And I got to get up to Canada, man.
Absolutely, I appreciate your support, and I'm glad that you're picking up on our approach, which absolutely is being careful about what we do, moving slowly forward, and making sure that decisions we're making are right for the community as a whole. That really is where we want to be heading, is to make sure that everything we do is gonna be the right thing to do. And if you try and rush it, then you might make some bad decisions along the way. And yeah, I think 5 years is a good timeline. And if we can do it quicker, we will, but not by taking any risks.
Awesome. Well, WRC Sweden is this week.
Yeah.
So obviously you appear to be a WRC Plus and all live follower like the rest of us. So
I am.
I'm guessing you've got maybe a prediction for the maybe a 1-2-3 for the podium for us. It's hard, isn't it?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've got my favorites, and they aren't necessarily who I think are going to do well. I think Ottenak has actually shown what he can do.
It's fantastic.
Yeah,
he just wow. Yeah. I think he learned. Yeah, I think something when he was with Ogier that 1 year. I mean, something clicked.
Yeah.
And consistency suddenly went with speed at the same time. He could used to be able to do one or the other, not both. Now he's got both.
Yeah, and maybe it's a little bit of historical favoritism for me, but I was also always a Tommy Mäkinen fan. So I think you'll see more than one Toyota on the podium, and I think it's going to be Oit followed by Jari Mäty as a 1-2, and then I'm not sure who's going to sneak on the third, but let's give Ogier the push to be on third.
Well played. I have a little bit of different take on it, only because I think Ogier is going to be snow plowing on Friday, and there's some longer stages on Friday. I think Oit's going to be in that same boat. He's going to be second on the road behind him. So I don't have Oit actually on my podium because of that. Although, you know, the second pass through, you know, those guys are so fast, it's hard to say. But I'm going to throw out actually a weird one. I think Thierry Neuville is going to make up for last year. I think he's got a good starting position. I think he's going to win it. I think second, believe it or not, I have a feeling that that's one where we might see Esa-Pekka Lappi.
Okay.
Fast rallies are his thing, you know. Finland,
yep, for sure.
Poland. I mean, the kid's quick. He's a natural, and he knows these roads. He's good with those conditions. I'm putting him second on that one. Third, I think I put Jari Mäty Latvala. So I think I'm gonna have a second, third Toyota on that one. But the thing is it's so hard to know now. The teams are so packed with good drivers. The vehicles are all so well matched in performance. Neither of us mentioned Citroën, of course, but after last year's Sweden, we don't know. I think the Jokers are going to be able to start putting on the cars isn't till like Mexico. So if the cars are still like last year, I don't expect a lot.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch for sure. And, without a doubt, the level of competition this year in the WRC is going to be tighter than last year, and last year was such a joy to watch as well.
Well, I don't think it's ever been a better time to be a fan of the WRC, with the way that we can watch the coverage, with the close competition, all the manufacturers involved. It's a great time.
I'm going to reserve myself a little bit and say that 2023 is going to be an even better time to watch the WRC.
Well played, sir. Well played.
And you didn't even know that. You set me up for that one, did you?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, now you have a rally event that you're organizing that's coming up as the next event, I believe, in the CRC, right?
Yeah, I'm lead organizer for the Rocky Mountain Rally, which is round two of the CRC, coming up in late May, the weekend after Olympus, based out of Invermere, BC.
So that'll be round two of the CRC. So you'll be organizing that. That's I've always heard great things about Rocky Mountain. On my bucket list to come up and visit, but
well, you can get a passport by then for sure. So.
hopefully, I'll see what I can do.
And before then, I might even find myself down in Oregon. So
we would love to have you come visit. It'll be the first round of the American Rally Association Championship Series, and just announced today. It is Tuesday, February 13th. Ford Performance is going to be doing a contingency program, a much bigger contingency program than they've ever done, or at least they've done in a long time that I can remember since I've been involved in the sport, to give some cash rewards to drivers of Ford vehicles. So that's an awesome, awesome announcement.
That is awesome. Certainly the Super Canada's contingency program has been, played a big part in our series. And you know, any manufacturer can get a lot of return for that investment, and it certainly helps out the drivers at all levels. It's really, really important to everybody, and that's awesome to see.
Exactly. So we're super excited for that, and you know, another great championship. You know, you guys in Canada, the more we can get to come down and play with us, and more of our guys can come up north and play with you guys. It's a good group of people. We love what you do up there. So tell us again, though, what's the best way that rally fans can follow the progress of this WRC in Canada strategy that you got going on? You got specific social media links that everybody can follow and, of course, become a member?
Yeah, so our website, which is going to have regular content, we're actually going to try and publish regular content from every WRC around. So even if you're a WRC fan, you can go there and get news stories that you might not see anywhere else. They're coming to us through Red Bull, and that's at rallypromoter.ca. Straightforward, no fancy French spellings or accents or anything on that. And we're also on Facebook as well. I'll ask you to throw the link up into your podcast. I can't find it at the moment. But we're on Facebook under Rally Promoter Association of Canada. There we're going to try and cross-promote as much as we can everything else. We will have some member-only content that we're going to generate from events, so that if you're a member, you'll get to get a little bit deeper, get a bit of a deeper dive into what we're doing and some of the stuff that we're seeing along the way. But we'll also keep everybody updated as we hit our milestones and have successes or failures along the way as well.
Well, Keith Morrison, thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us all about this. I couldn't be more excited. Is there any last words you'd like to tell our followers before we let you go for this evening?
No, I just want to thank you for having me on. It's great to chat with you and share the excitement about the WRC coming to Canada. And for everybody else out there, even if you're not in a position to take out a membership, you know, give us good thoughts and cross your fingers for us. It's a long, exciting and challenging road ahead of us.
Definitely. You know, like and follow, you know, those numbers do help every time.
Absolutely.
And, super excited for it. I'll definitely be there when you guys end up having that first car cross that start line. I couldn't be more excited. It's awesome stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Good luck to that. And I guess that's it for our show. Remember, everybody, you can follow us on iTunes, on Facebook. It's at Open Paddock. And on Twitter, same thing, at Open Paddock, at Open Paddock Rally on Instagram. As Keith said there, Rally Promoter is on Facebook and on their website, rallypromoter.ca. We will end up having those links on this podcast website. So thank you for listening, everybody. Have a good evening.